This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 193 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, we're doing this a little early this week.
Just by one day, but no one will ever know because we'll still come out on Friday.
And you know what else this week is, right?
What's that?
It's that week that you and I share where we both have to supposedly sing happy birthday to each other.
It's birthday week for David and Max, isn't it? Not the same day, but the same week.
It is kind of ironic that and our former co-host from Airplane Geeks, Peter's birthday is this week, and your co-host, Mary Kirby's birthday is this week. It's an Aviation Geek Fest birthday week.
That's right.
So we got a lot of stories because I got overzealous last night. So let's start off with DJI starts a war against no-fly zones, quad in the volcano, trash, swarms, the elephant in the room, what happens when AI fails and you get hit in the head with a drone, a video of the week, and listener mail. So let's get started. Well, our first story comes from Gizmodo.com. DJI mysteriously turned vast swaths of Iraq and Syria into no-fly zones. DJI, we know, has been working on geofencing. When we had the quadcopter crash into the White House lawn within a week or so, they had a no-fly zone built over Washington. Well, evidently, they're now doing it in Syria and Iraq, because it has been reported and seen that ISIS has been using quadcopters loaded with explosives to attack people with them. So what did DJI do?
They created a no-fly zone or zones over these war zones. There's a lot of speculation as to DJI's motive for that. Some people are saying, well, they're trying to thwart ISIS. They don't want ISIS using, or anyone, using their drones in those ways. Some people are disputing that, and they say, well, you know, maybe that's not it exactly. Maybe it's more of a PR move on their part, so DJI can say that they've tried to do something. But it's subject of a little bit of debate. And of course, some people are talking about the fact that, well, you know, that kind of no-fly zone thing is easily defeated. And we have an example of that, don't we?
We do. Evidently, this was from SUASnews.com. A CNN journalist evades DJI geo restrictions in Iraq. Where there's a will, there's a counteraction, and there's a way. Supposedly, he took his Mavic and wrapped it with tinfoil and gave it, believe it or not, a tinfoil hat. and suddenly, it had no GPS, therefore, no restrictions on where to fly.
That's right. No GPS means the no-fly zone feature is disabled because, of course, it needs GPS to tell whether you're in or approaching a no-fly zone. So that was pretty easy to do. There's also a report in here that DJI will issue a mandatory firmware update. I haven't seen that anywhere else, David, so I'm not sure if that's got some good sound fact behind it. But the idea is that this firmware, if in fact it's coming, would stop the DJI drones from taking off if they can't see a certain number of satellites, if they can't confirm their position. I don't know. That's problematic in and of itself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you won't be able to stop you from flying indoors, but it will possibly hinder other, you know, when you do these kind of things, there's always a positive effect and an adverse effect. Mm. Now, say you're in an area where you can only get two satellites and the minimum is three, and you need to use your DJI quad for your filming, you're a professional drone photographer, and you only can get two satellites when you need three, and you can't fly. I mean, the only other thing they could do is, the last time we had a firmware update that was kind of this harsh, they noted that when you turned it off, remember, we had this discussion, if you turned it off, it would leave a report back to DJI so that they were notified that you turned off the functionality. So there would be some sort of record saying, you know, Jim Smith in wherever turned off this functionality and flew without it. So I don't see DJI not doing it, but it's a matter of how much of a negative effect it will have for the positives that it might want to get out of it.
Yeah, and as I say, I'm not sure of the accuracy of the report that there's a firmware update coming, in part because of some of these issues that it raises, but I think we'll find out soon enough.
All right, the next one. NASA selects Black Swift Technologies small UAS for volcano ash monitoring. This was from gisuser.com. Black Swift and volcanoes. It's kind of an interesting name for a drone that's going to be monitoring volcanoes and flying into hazardous air zones.
On purpose, right. This is a contract, as the headline says, from NASA. And Black Swift is to develop and deliver a small UAS solution to explore volcanoes. Now, they're going to provide an airframe and the avionics and the sensors, and they intend to use that to measure the gases and temperatures, pressure, humidity, the winds, even particle size and trace gases. Now, this will give a lot of information about these volcanoes.
And why does NASA want to know about volcanoes? We basically had the North Atlantic Corridor shut down by Iceland having a volcano rush that we talked about, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago now.
It's been a while.
And it's been a while, and the volcanic ash was getting into the jet engines. And basically, I'll leave this to the engine expert to verify this, but seizing the engines of the airliners flying into that area.
Yeah, if you fly through a certain degree of volcanic ash, the jet engines they'll choke, they'll just shut down. And an airliner with no engines operating is a very heavy glider and not something that you want to be involved in. We've had some actual cases where that's happened. I think around the Indonesian volcano, and I think, I'm really stretching here, but I think in that case, they were actually able to restart the engines once they, I'll use the word, fell to a lower altitude. So having a lot of detailed, specific information about volcanic eruptions has a huge impact for air traffic management systems. So this is, I think, a really, really important thing. Great use. Black Hawk currently offers a fixed-wing drone, the Swift Trainer. It's a hand-launched drone. They use that primarily for mapping and other similar missions, photogrammetry missions. And so I think they've got the background and the expertise to work with NASA on this project. So this sounds really encouraging.
But this is a really hostile environment to take any sort of aircraft in.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what they do to
harden the drone.
Harden, yeah, I guess that would be the best term. Add survivability to what they want to do. I mean, because it sounds like they actually want to fly into cones and stuff like that. So interesting. One of those things that I was not expecting to ever see us talk about would be UAVs and volcanoes. You know, another one of those, we never know what we're going to find when we go searching through stories.
Right.
Let's go from out of the frying pan into the fire, or out of the fire into the what happens when the frying pan falls on your head. The FAA wanted to know what happens when a UAV falls onto a person, which I guess we've sort of wondered about that also. We've talked about ingesting quads into engines and stuff like that, but what happens when a quad hits you on the head?
Now, the reason the FAA is really interested in that question being answered is because they want to create regulations for flight over people. And as we know, many of the regulations, much of the driver behind regulations is based on achieving a certain safety effect. So you need to know what's the effect of being hit by a drone. And so there's a consortium of universities that have been looking into this. It's a great group. University of Alabama, Huntsville, Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University is in this group. So is Mississippi State University and the University of Kansas.
And all of those have well-documented aviation programs.
Right.
They identify three dominant injury types applicable to small drones. One was blunt force trauma, which was the most significant types of fatalities. Lacerations, and this is the blade guards thing, and lacerations even just from flying them. And penetration injuries, which is, I guess, the drone physically enters the body. We'll leave it at that.
Well, what they did, talking about their process a little bit, they reviewed techniques that are used to assess blunt force trauma, those penetration injuries and lacerations. They also collected and classified collision severity by identifying hazardous drone features, such as unprotected rotors. They also reviewed more than 300 publications, these from the automotive industry, consumer battery market, also toy standards, and the AUVSI database. And then finally, they conducted crash tests. They did some dynamic modeling, and they looked at some analysis related to kinetic energy and energy transfer, crash dynamics, all of that sort of thing. And with that methodology, they arrived at a few observations and conclusions and some recommendations.
Let's talk about the conclusions first. The one is, and I thought this was interesting, multi-rotor drones fall more slowly than the same mass of metal due to the high drag of the drone. So in this case, for once, the enemy of a pilot drag is actually beneficial to someone underneath the aircraft as it's falling. The other one, I think Max and I sort of read and went, yeah, well, we could have told you this years ago, which is lithium batteries need a unique standard to ensure safety. We've known people who've blown up their garages, Parker, with lithium batteries. It's one of those things that I personally have said one of the most dangerous things about not knowing about these things are the lithium ion batteries. So, and from that, Max, what were the recommendations?
Three recommendations. Continue the research to refine the metrics that they developed. That's the first. The second is to develop a simplified test method to characterize potential injury. And then the third recommendation is validating a proposed standard and models using potential injury severity test data. The second phase of this project is set to begin pretty soon in June 2017. And they'll take a look at risks of collisions with aircraft. So they've looked at collisions with people. Now they're going to move on to collisions with aircraft. There's a link we'll put in the show notes that's very informative, has a lot of information, some photos, and even some videos of some of the testing that they did. And so look for that in the show notes for this episode.
So let's move on to, well, you've landed on your brain and you need artificial intelligence. AT&T Labs are working to combine drone video footage with AI monitoring. This was from FierceWireless.com. AT&T wants to do something we've talked about a lot, which is cell tower inspections. And they'd like the quad or the drone or the UAS to be completely autonomous to fly the mission, so they can focus more specifically on the data. And flying towers autonomously, that's going to be kind of a challenge, considering there might be wires nearby and all of the other aspects that go with a cell tower, lots of cells, you know, and not every cell tower is actually a tower. I know around here,
true,
a lot of our water towers are equipped with cell sites and tops of buildings because I live near a major city. So those kind of inspections are and having the quad or the drone fly autonomously are going to be quite challenging.
Yeah, for sure. And there's really a couple of things that AT&T is trying to address. In the end, it's the cost of labor. But you can do this old school and send an engineer up the tower or whatever it is for a physical inspection. And we know that, you know, that's expensive because of the manpower, the safety issue is involved here and all that. Or you can send a drone up there and take some video of the cell tower and the equipment up there. But then you have to have an engineer still afterwards analyze the video and make some determinations as to whether or not there's a problem up at the top of the cell tower. So what AT&T is trying to do here is kind of combine all of that, send the drone up, have it take some video, but use artificial intelligence techniques to analyze the video and make a determination as to whether or not there's a problem without human intervention. Now, AT&T Labs say that they've used 6,000 videos and over 1 million cell tower photos to create this tower inspection algorithm. So I think this is AI and big data, I think, David. There's a quote, "We're teaching it to identify over 200 types of elements on a cell tower. It's able to identify equipment," right? Just identify the equipment. The next step, they say, is that we're currently working on is to train the algorithm to identify defects. So AT&T is into this pretty deep. And it's interesting that it's not just about let's fly a drone up there and make some video. It's, again, going above and beyond, taking the next step, taking it to the next level and saying, okay, how do we automate the process of interpreting the video that the drone takes?
We take for granted as people with intelligence what our base knowledge is. But when you're starting at zero, it's kind of amazing what you need to have as base knowledge. And, you know, 6,000 videos and 1 million cell tower photos to just create the inspection system is kind of impressive. The amount of data you have to pump into an aircraft to even start thinking. So I'm always impressed with the amount of data that primes the pump, shall we say, before it starts learning. Hmm. But if a drone was an elephant, it would never forget that data. And that brings me to our next story from PBS, PBS.org, the NewsHour. And Tanzania is using drones to keep elephants away from people. Elephants and people don't really mix, even if you've seen the Barnum and Bailey Circus. An elephant grazes where an elephant wants to graze. But unfortunately, they're destroying crops in Tanzania because, like everywhere else in the world, people are encroaching on wildlife. And the wildlife doesn't have much places to go, so they start eating crops.
And as a result of this, the local residents there have been, in some cases, killing the elephants, which on the one hand sounds terrible, but if you're trying to grow some food to feed your family and these elephants keep coming in and destroying your crops, that's a pretty serious matter. So they don't want the crops to be destroyed, but they don't want the elephants to be killed by the people as well. So we have this nonprofit organization. It's called Resolve. It's a U.S.-based organization. And they're testing the use of drones to basically scare the elephants away. They're using DJI Phantoms, it looks like, from the video. They've tried other methods, things like firing gunshots or things like that, but they're not really perfect. In many cases, it involves getting the person, a human, close to the elephant to scare them away. The elephants aren't stupid, and they have this tendency to figure out what man is up to and then eventually ignore whatever method is being used. So they note that so far the elephants have not gotten used to the drones and figured out that they really are not a swarm of bees coming after them. It's working so far, but there are a few problems, things like the drones don't work in rain or high winds. It's difficult to use drones to scare away elephants at night, which is oftentimes when they graze. So it's not a perfect solution, but I think, David, it's an interesting solution.
We've got drones messing around with all sorts of wildlife these days. But, you know, when an elephant hits a quadcopter with its trunk, yeah, it ends up having to go to a landfill. Which brings us to our next story, which is drones, the latest high-tech tool for La Crucis waste management, landfill management. It's a messy, but somebody's got to do it story. And anyone who's seen the North Jersey, some of the New York dumps, they're very large landfills. One of the largest man-made sites in seen from space is the landfill in North Jersey, that's basically for New York City. And if you got to manage something that big, it's sort of like a farm. You've got large acreages and you want to manage what's going on there. Great way to survey it is but from the air. So you get a quadcopter, and I don't think this organization, I'll let you hint at what it is, wants to be known as the quadcopter used for monitoring trash.
If you're operating a big landfill like this, at least in this case, they essentially create what they call cells, landfill cells, which is where the trash is going into. And if you're trying to manage this overall, this large facility, like you say, David, you need to know how those cells are filling up so that you can plan the next cells and so forth. So it's difficult to obtain that kind of information by traditional means, but by using a drone, it's much simpler. And what they're doing is they're sending a quadcopter up there, and it's, I think, that famous white quadcopter that we see everywhere. And they say that in about 8.5 minutes, they take about 67 photos of the cell that they're trying to look at. They process the photos, and that gives them a really very detailed photo and elevations that the landfill management company can use to manage the volumetrics of a new landfill cell.
Now, if we really think this out, Max, how far removed from precision agriculture is this monitoring a landfill? They're very parallel.
Yeah, I think so.
And geomapping. We've talked a lot about using drones for mapping.
Yeah.
So it's theme and variation. But it is kind of fun that we get to talk about, I'm going to go fly my quadcopter at the dump. And you know, at dumps, usually you get swarms of flies and bees and bugs. And yet we're going to change that to swarms of drones. And our friends at DARPA have challenged the Army, Navy, Air Force academies to zero to swarm in 8 months.
That's right. This is the Service Academies Swarm Challenge. And it's an experiment in some ways. And they're looking to have students address some swarming issues, but principally tactics. They say this is more about the tactics of swarms than it is about developing specific hardware and software for swarming. So the students are looking at offensive and defensive tactics for swarms of small UAVs.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know who to root for on that one, but there's nothing like inter-service rivalry to get the intellectual juices flowing, especially with the academies. Any kind of challenge like this is good because, you know, it keeps the guys competitive. And let's face it, the academies are the best and the brightest that we have. I'm sure DARPA is going to get some really good technology and thinking out of the box in the interest of a little play and inter-service rivalry.
Interesting strategy. I think it'll be successful. And we do have a video. It's kind of a promotional video about this, an overview, and you can look for that video in the show notes for this episode.
Okay, now we've got some, I don't want to say bad news, but interesting news. This is from androidheadlines.com. Alphabet's Project Wing cuts staff before progress update. Reportedly Alphabet, and Alphabet is Google, right?
Yeah, the parent company for Google.
And has had Project Wing now for a couple of years, and Project Wing was looking at drone delivery, and evidently they have laid off about half the staff.
But at the same time, there are sources, according to this article, that are saying that it doesn't mean that Project Wing is coming off the rails, that it's still a live program. And in fact, they say that there is a major progress update and demonstration that's coming possibly before the summer. So I think these are anonymous sources, close to the situation, that sort of thing. It's a little confusing. We'll see. Maybe they're changing gears. They've had some management changes at Project Wing. And some people say that, well, the staff reductions are just a result of that and sort of restructuring, reorganizing. But hopefully this will become clear within the next couple of months.
It very interesting. But let's get to the real news.
Here we go.
There's this tiny little boxy state in New England.
All right, Connecticut. Connecticut.
You know, and they have all sorts of radical ideas. This is from, and I even love where this news comes from, ctnewsjunkie.com. The Public Safety Committee grounds drones legislation.
You'll recall that we have talked previously about some proposed Connecticut legislation that would allow law enforcement to weaponize drones. If that was passed and signed into law, then that would make Connecticut the first state that allowed such a thing. This caused a lot of furor, as you might suspect. And so Peter Sachs, the drone attorney, he wrote an email to all the members of the Public Safety and Security Committee, asking them to vote against the proposal. Sachs wrote to them and said, "It is entirely illogical for this legislative body to consider weaponized drones flown by the public to be unsafe, but consider weaponized drones flown by law enforcement to somehow be magically safe. That is just patently absurd. Although modern drones are generally quite reliable, some are unproven technology to a certain extent. Drones are not even required to have an airworthiness certificate. Strap a weapon to one, and the results of any malfunction or crash could be far, far worse." So apparently the committee, the Public Safety and Security Committee,
came to their senses and let the bill die.
Okay, exactly. So hopefully that's the end of this story.
You know, because we love Connecticut and they're attaching flamethrowers and guns to quadcopters and voting for instance.
That's Yankee ingenuity, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay, you know.
All right, a video of the week, David.
Well, let's talk, we were just talking about guns, let's talk about even bigger guns.
Big, big guns.
Like a South Dakota-class battleship. As I said to our Slack team, I titled this video of the week, Roll Tide or That Beautiful Alabama Drone Footage. The Alabama was BB-60, which is a South Dakota-class battleship, which fought in World War II, was launched in 1942, one of the first battleships launched after Pearl Harbor, and one of the only battleships that fought in both campaigns, the European campaign and the Pacific campaign. So it fought in the Atlantic and Pacific. And this was shot a while ago on September 22nd, 2014, but it's a hexacopter with a GoPro, and it's just flying over USS Alabama Memorial Park, and it's kind of a stately video, and it's an impressive battleship. I'm fortunate enough to see the New Jersey every day in my commute, but it's a really neat footage. You can't go wrong with it. It's a World War II battleship with big guns and turrets and being honored by modern technology. Let's say that.
You notice the gate guard that's there, too, that the drone flies over and has some great shots of.
I forgot what the gate guard is.
It's an F-4 Phantom.
Phantoms are cool. For once, the geek was paying attention to the ship and not, you know, I am the son of a sailor. I was paying attention to the ship, not the airplane.
All right. And we have listener mail from one of our great listeners, don't we, David?
Yeah. And this is from Dave. The Franz Josef Glacier is a major tourist attraction in New Zealand. And this is from tvnz.co.nz. NZ.
NZ.
NZ. See, I did it right. And flown in a helicopter flight path and heliport. So basically, they use this heliport to fly people up and down the glacier. And the drone is being flown directly over the landing pads. So not good. And the police are warning the general public, don't be doing this.
Because it keeps happening. It's happened several times, but they have spoken to these people. And at least this most recent case, the guy, the drone operator, had absolutely no idea that he was flying inappropriately, that he had no permission to do that, and so forth. So that problem exists everywhere, and this is an example of that coming from New Zealand.
And again, it's that whole issue of we have to keep educating people, you know. And we also, our co-host on Airplane Geeks sent out a plea on Monday about there are wildfires in California, and evidently Cal Fire is having issues again where they're not able to do drops because people are videotaping the fire with quadcopters. So if you know somebody who's stupid enough to do that, will you just talk them down or take their quad away, please? There are times that we need people not to fly. You know, we don't want to discourage flying, but there are times that you shouldn't be flying or places you shouldn't be flying. So I guess on that public service announcement, Max, we should wrap this one up. What do you think?
We want to thank all of you for listening to us at the UAV Digest. Find our homepage at theuavdigest.com. We've got some pretty extensive show notes, lots of links, lots of videos, lots of things that you can see and learn. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, that's at theuavdigest.com/193.
And let me throw in one more public service announcement, and that is Max and I are going to be at, and Drone Mama are going to be at the Wings Over Pittsburgh air show. So if you're in New York, Ohio, Western Pennsylvania, the week of May 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th, we'll be out there. Send us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com. And we'd love to say hello. And it's an air show. You can't go wrong. But any of those people out in that area who are listeners, send us an email and maybe we can hook up and say hello and swap some stories. So,
yeah. And we should also mention, David, that that Saturday evening, which would be May 13th, there's going to be a sort of a group of aviation podcasters from the U.S. and overseas, actually, that are going to be assembling to produce a live podcast episode. So, that would definitely be something that you might want to take a look at. Again, write to us and we'll provide the details.
So with that, and of course, you can find us and reach us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can become part of our Slack listener team. Lots and lots of people are getting involved with that. You can do that by sending us your email address to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or you can check it out at our homepage on uavdigest.com/team. You can join our Facebook page at facebook.com/uavdigest. leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Purchase some swag or become a patron of the show, and all of those links are available on our homepage, theuavdigest.com. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.